Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, September 1st. It's September 2020, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
Chili making Ian Ferguson. I'm chili cooking Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be discussing Call of Duty cheater.
Yes.
Getting caught. Chewy founder acquiring some GameStop stake. And a big NWC trade happened.
Big.
Patreon poll topic as well. We'll see what else comes up. Maybe time for Q&A. First, we got some wares at ultimatenintendo.com. The Not For Resale Blu-ray is back in stock. Hallelujah. So, the only major change or difference is now it now has both English and Spanish subtitles on there. So there you go. For all you Spanish speakers that couldn't follow along before. Now you can go to ultimatenintendo.com. And of course, we got the pins going on. Got the RBI baseball stickers and certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks there. It was a chilly weekend, Ian. Not just chilly, like cold. It got cooled down finally, at least in San Diego.
It was the theme of the weekend was let's make chili. That's how it was. You called me and told me that you were very excited.
I was very excited.
You had come upon three pounds of ground turkey
for like $9.50 only. That's a deal and a half.
Yeah, that is. And you were going to make chili. You had bought a kit. You asked me for a couple of ideas, and then I had been thinking about making chili prior in the week, and I ended up making white chili with chicken, which is pretty much all gone at this point. It was a rousing success. But yeah, chili is great to make. It's perfect at all times of the year. I like to make it when it's hot. I like to make it when it's cold. I like to make it when I was young, and I will like to make it when I am old.
All right, Dr. Seuss, chili book. So, you forgot to bring your container.
I did.
I'll send you home with some, even though you did not bring any of your chili for me for our chili trade.
It did not last.
How many people were at the chili?
It's just Vonnie and I.
How many pounds did you make?
Made it with 2 pounds of chicken.
And beans? You went two people, ate through all that in one sitting?
I've got like enough for lunch and then that's it. Yeah, we made it on Friday or Saturday.
Oh, so you ate it in 2 days.
Yeah,
okay.
So I ate it
I was
going
to say,
days.
One meal, that's a lot.
Not one meal.
Because it's like, because once you add the beans, it's like six, it doubles the weight at least.
Yes.
I put in, 3 pounds of 85% lean turkey meat, which came out good because a little bit of fat, not a lot. And then 2 pounds, I had a 3-year-old can of black beans. It's still good. It's canned. It lasts for decades. I had that and then went to the dollar store, Ian. And they had kidney beans at the dollar store. I love the dollar store. So I bought 2 pounds of kidney beans for $2. And they had the Hatch chili crisps, which is something I discovered didn't exist. They basically peel off the Hatch chili, I guess, and then they crisp them up. So it's like a healthier potato chip, but there's a kick to it.
It's tasty. It's kind of like the freshest fried onions, kind of.
So I garnished it with that. I sent Ian a picture. I'm very proud of my garnishment.
It looked nice.
And plating. So I did that, and then I added some, Ian recommended some more cumin and chili powder. I did not have, so I bought that because the kit wasn't enough. I wanted a doctorate. And yeah, and garnish with that and a little dollop of sour cream in the middle, and you serve. And I have some left still. And I brought over, and Frank had some on Sunday with his friend Richard, and with a side of cornbread. You got to have some little bit of cornbread with it.
I didn't. I ran out of, I always like to make cornbread, especially with the white chicken chili. It goes really well, but I ran out of, I was out of cornmeal, so I didn't make any.
I just buy it at Sprouts.
Yeah.
It's like a big block for like $2.
Stuff that you buy is really tasty, too. I just like to make it. I like to make it in the skillet. But yeah, my buddy Adam gave me what must have been a couple of pounds of Hatch green chilies. So those, for people who don't know what Hatch green chilies are, they're a type of chili, green chili, that is only grown in New Mexico. It's like a brand name. And farmers will bring them out to California, San Diego, every summer, and they set up big roasters, and you buy boxes of them for, you know, like $30, and they will roast them right there for you. So my friends Adam and my friends John, although John did not do it this year, usually go during the summer, and they'll buy a couple boxes, and then they'll take them home and clean them and bag them up and freeze them, so they've got roasted Hatch green chilies for the entire year.
So they're roasted,
super good.
They just taste better when you slice them, and you
yeah,
can,
they're just,
they don't eat them raw. I mean, they're not raw. They don't eat them like just whole, do they?
Oh, I do. I have.
They're not that too hot to do that?
No, they usually come in multiple spice categories. This year they were more mild. Last year I got some extra hot ones, but yeah, I love the taste of them. Just like the roasted ones, just get the skin off and just eat the flesh. It's so so good.
Flesh?
Yeah, the flesh.
Is it called flesh?
Yeah.
For that? Okay. And that's skin, and is the flesh inside?
You get rid of the skin.
Oh, then what are
that's
the crisps,
what roasting them for?
What are the crisps? How are those made then?
Probably dehydrated. The flesh dehydrated.
Chili flesh. It just sounds weird to me. I like how that sounds.
You have a new flea market madness.
Sir. Thanks, Ian, for bringing that up. I wasn't going to bring it up at all.
Nope.
Yeah, this weekend, Ian, was I edited a flea market madness. That's out number 35. It was filmed May 2015. And then I had about 15 episodes left in the tail. Check it out on the YouTube channel there. The one thing I want to bring up, Ian, from that. Yeah, I found like 10 Genesis games I got a deal on. I found a GBA SP-101. I got a deal on that, which I probably own like one of every color now. So eventually I got to probably sell a bunch of those, because now they're worth like $120.
Mm-hmm.
GBA SPs. These would be like, you know, these would be like 60 to 80 for a GBA SP. A regular one was like 30 to 40 like 5 years ago, back when I was
sure,
picking these things. And obviously a lot more people are buying the SP-101s because they're brilliant to use those. So I came across, Ian, okay, if you want to be spoiled, turn it off right now. This is the most controversial part of the episode, at least the part that people are talking about. Turn it off right now, but you'll see why. So I came across a vendor who's a reseller. Hadn't seen him there before. I remember that. And he had a bunch of game stuff. I remember he had a couple of Sega Bass Fishing Dreamcast, because that's my favorite cover ever in a video game. One was sealed, I remember. Then he had an N64 for sale. And what does Pat always do what do you do when you come across an N64, Ian? What's the first thing you do? You check the jumper, mm-hmm, to make sure which one is there, what's there. There was no jumper there, and the lid wasn't on. And I go to the guy, how much is the N64? This is before I did it. He goes, oh, I think he said, God, I can't remember my video, $35 or $50, something like that, he said. Mm-hmm. Something in that area. So I take off the jumper. There's no jumper. I said to him, you know you can't sell this. It won't be working without the jumper. He goes, yeah, I know. I'm like, okay. Then I looked, and there's a jumper. It was separate behind one of those like spinny acrylic case things with a bunch of other stuff. And he goes, yeah. It said if they wanted, they can buy it separately. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah. And he said, no one nowadays wants an N64. That everyone has a piece, so you have to buy them both separately. And my mind just went, was blown. And it was the regular jumper. It wasn't even the expanded pack. So my mind was blown. I mean never had seen someone deliberately separate a jumper from an N64 before and sell it, even at this one. I never had seen that.
No,
in
that's absolutely insane.
And what's worse about that, I mean, at the time I was just like, my blood wasn't boiling. I was just like, this is the sleaziest thing I've ever seen. Like, I can picture someone buying the N64 and not realizing that and bringing
it
home.
Absolutely.
And not knowing what the hell's going on.
And that jumper is useless to them without the 64. Almost no one's looking for a jumper. If you've got an N64 without something in there, instead of buying a jumper, you're probably just going to say, okay, I'm going to go find the expansion pack.
I mean, I've seen them before. I mean, I have seen jumpers available before, because obviously you get the expansion pack, you take out the jumper. I've picked up a couple.
I'm just saying they're not something that's going to go, like, super fast.
Yeah, so to me then, that was the height of, that was probably not the angriest I ever got with the seller, but that was like, wow, because that wasn't just, hey, I'm charging more than I should. You can charge what you want, but like, you're going to this other side of really stretching out how much you're going to be buying this is for. And I don't know how many people would come to the swap meet to buy an N64 with the jumper. I can see the opposite happening. I found N64s without jumpers before. But I've never been like, I'm looking specifically for an N64 without a jumper. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone, I have a spare jumper laying around, but no N64 for it. That's what people got the most kick out of. I couldn't believe that. And I had it when I had it in the live premiere with the chat. I expected at least one or two people to say, oh, Pat, that's okay. You usually have people that always are contrarians. No one was a contrarian that time for that. And of course, Frank dances, so it's fun. And I found, I won't give away, I found a Saturn game that was surprising to see. That'll be a secret. In a bunch of, you know, usually like PS2 games and, you know, stuff like that. That era of games, and finding a Saturn game was like, whoa, okay, there's just one there randomly. So a huge, Ian, huge cache of mask toys was found in South America and Chile with a bunch of other Kenner toys. This isn't a full topic, but this was an incredible looking find. This is one of those like finds that, you know, collectors dream about if this was video games or, you know, sort of like a Tim, it was like a Tim Atwood thing. But for mass toys and it sounds like some other Kenner toys, like Chuck Norris toys that were found, like mid-80s, we're talking Kenner toys.
Lots of vehicles.
Yeah, I don't know if what
brand new.
Yeah, I don't know what runs of these are. I think I saw one article, it was like five different Iguana, Firefly, Bullet, Meteor, and Manta mass toys. But the tweet from Toy Scavenger doesn't do this find justice. There's a YouTube video that shows more of all these toys that are found, not just mass toys, but like we're talking like a warehouse full of these things. Like we're talking hundreds of boxes of sealed shipping boxes of these toys. And I love masks, but I don't keep up with the toys and how much they're worth. Obviously this is good for the collectors because everyone can get one. They're trying to sell them through the Mask Facebook group, which I just try to become a member of to see, because hell, I might want one. I mean, if there's tons of these, they can't be selling for a huge amount,
right?
And I don't know what it does to the value of all this stuff. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's all of them. There's also Sky Commanders, which I've never was Sky Commanders the ones with the little air missiles that fired?
Let me see that.
Sky Commanders, because those are ones that I had as a kid. I had one of them. Were those? Yeah, they were.
I remember these.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I might be in the mood for this. Okay.
Yeah, they're the ones that you would.
They propelled. Okay, yeah, that's different than what I was thinking.
Cables.
I was thinking of the little mini guys in the vehicles that they shot the missiles at them. That's something different. Okay, this is different. Okay, but this is still more. This is more. You know, Mask and Sky Commanders and Chuck Norris. This is more esoteric toy stuff. This isn't like, you know, G.I. Joe or Ninja Turtle stuff, but it's still awesome to see this stuff being found. And that's why, you know, you got to watch out for this stuff, because this stuff happens every year. It seems like there's a find like this that's happened. And yeah, I don't know how things end up in South America like this, like all the Caltrons and the freaking Caltrons was Mexico. And then, you know, all the dinosaur peaks that end up in Chile. That's where I got mine from. So yeah, it's just interesting.
It's crazy. So just on the homebrew console front, there was a article about the Wii Boy Color is what they called it. It's a nice looking case mod that basically takes a Wii that takes a Wii motherboard and stuck it inside what is almost a one-to-one replica of a Game Boy Color case that was 3D printed. If you look at the Game Boy Color and the Wii Boy Color side by side, they're almost the same size, almost the same dimensions. It's a little bit thicker. It's got rear triggers and two analog sticks, and can run all Wii games. It's not emulation in any way, shape, or form. It's actually just you know, the guts stuck inside a case. We've seen some of this stuff done before. There was that really small Wii, I think, that we saw that was in an Altoids tin.
Oh yeah,
a few years ago that
I remember we talked about that. Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
I think like was burned up in his battery like in a half hour, whatever.
Yeah. He did have to software hack some of the Wii's controls.
Oh sure.
But yeah, so I thought that was kind of neat.
Well, he came up with his own custom boards to help make this run too. I think I saw that he had to develop his own little boards to make this work too, besides the motherboard. This is not an overclocked Android smartphone running an emulator. It's an actual Nintendo Wii motherboard inside this 3D printed case, cut down to fit, plus its own custom circuit boards. Oh, cool! It's a 480p display from a car backup camera. Nice. This is awesome.
Yep. Gets a reported 2 to 3 hours of battery life, runs on USB-C, so
is it a micro SD card, I guess, for the games?
I would have to assume. I don't think it actually says anywhere here, but yeah, that would be my guess, is that it's probably running something off SD card.
You gotta attach it to a CD-ROM
drive. There it is. 3.5-inch 480 IPS from a car backup system. You stopped just shy. A pair of standard 18650 lithium-ion batteries, a USB stick for storing games, and a USB-C port for charging and game transfers.
Stick.
So the stick must be inside the actual system acting as the storage.
You put the stick inside. Yep. Got it. And it says it's like an internal sort of thing.
Yeah, it's acting as internal. Okay. It says it uses the USB-C to charge and do game transfers.
That's not a bad idea. It's its own little internal hard drive, basically, instead of modding it to put your own little micro SD, a little port on the side. That's a pretty good idea to do that. Yeah, I like this stuff a lot. I'm not sure we're ever going to get a handheld Wii ever in our lives, but this is cool.
Yeah, this is by Ginger of Mods. I believe that's the Twitter handle, and it says in the article that it sounds like Ginger takes commissions if you absolutely must have one of your own.
Okay. I wonder what we charge for one of those. I mean, with that, you get GameCube capability as well. You get two systems.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's a two-for-one deal. Check it out. Ginger of Mods. He's got a decent following here. Never heard him before, you?
Mm-mm.
Well, let's go. Maybe
now I have.
Maybe he's the 2020 Ben Heck. Like, he's Ben Heck for a new generation.
Yeah.
He's the Scott DeWaz of mods coming out there. In sadder news, talk about the passing of Chadwick Boseman, age 43. This kind of shocked everyone when it happened, because I don't know. This sounds like many people didn't know he was living with colon cancer.
Yeah, it sounds like he kept it very, very private.
Sounds like the only people that knew about this were probably the director and producer of some of these movies. Probably wouldn't have to know that in case something happened. But other than that, like, no one knew about this. I don't know. You want to give your thoughts on this, how this hit you?
It caught me off guard, and I hate to sound emotionless, but so much has happened this year that a lot of times when things come up on the news these days, I don't feel a lot. But there was something that grabbed me about his passing. I think a lot of it just has to do with how young he was. 43 years old. But also the fact that the man was filming the movies that he is probably going to be best known for while dealing with cancer, chemotherapy, and treatments. I think that's an incredibly strong person who can do that. And, you know, the videos of him going and seeing children at the various cancer wards, at hospitals, you know, to brighten up their day while he's going through the exact same thing and not talking about it. I think it really speaks to the type of person that he most likely was in his day-to-day real life. And it's a shame that we won't see any more of him. And I can't imagine what it's like for those who not only saw him as a great actor, but as representation as well in a industry that often sidelines people of color. And that's kind of my thoughts on it. It's just, very sudden and very tragic.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that hasn't been acting professionally that long. That's what's amazing. Looks like his career really... He was on TV in little minor roles here and there, which happens to a lot of actors for the hit it big. You know, you get a role here and there. And then it looks like 2012... Oh, okay, he had one series for 13 episodes called Persons Unknown as an officer. But after that, you know, a 42 was when I first discovered him. Or, hey, this Jackie Robinson movie's coming out. And I remember I almost saw it in theaters. It just seemed like it was cool to see a modern Jackie Robinson movie, because there hadn't been one, I think. God, I mean, Jackie Robinson started in his own one way back. But, yeah, I want to check that out. And I didn't. I regretted that. And I still haven't seen it. I've seen parts of it. And it's really good. And then the James Brown movie I did not see. And then, obviously, once he did Civil War as Black Panther, then he blew up, obviously, from that. Then he did. He played Thurgood Marshall, which was the first African American Supreme Court justice. I didn't see that either. Tackling three real life, people like that are all like icons is kind of rare to see that. And he did it like one after the other.
Yeah,
which is not just you have to be a good actor. You have to like have the courage to say, hey, I'm going to play James Brown.
Yeah, it definitely takes a special person to be able to represent three icons the way
that quickly with like one after the other.
So yeah, I mean, that's I don't have a whole lot more to say on it, but it's.
And then obviously I talked about the importance of the Black Panther character before, and how it wasn't just like people were saying, well, there's been Blade and other superheroes that were black. I'm like, that's not the same thing. This is a major tentpole release that everyone is going to see. This isn't a joke like Meteor Man or Blank Man. Blade wasn't even marketed as a superhero. It was just an action movie that was R-rated as a vampire, you know, thing. So it was totally different.
And it wasn't just a black lead. It was black supporting characters. And
it was Africa.
Yeah, Africa. The almost the entire cast was, black and people of color. It was all, I think, yeah.
Except for Martin Freeman. Yeah.
Martin Freeman was... Yeah, he was the only guy. He's the only one that I can think of that was there.
Yeah, and it was a good movie. Obviously it's expected people are gonna put things on pedestals like that. But no, it was an important movie, and it was good. And it's a shame that obviously he passes away so young. But I looked at it as, man, this guy lived his life fullest. I mean, he's gonna be remembered forever for this body of work. Very impactful in such a small period of time. I mean, yeah, it was almost like I was sad, but it was just like, man, this guy went out on his own terms and didn't ask for pity from anyone. No. Just did his job, did it well, and now everyone's going to look up to it. Like, I will not be able to bring myself to see Black Panther 2 if they make it. I'm not going to be like, it is what it is. It's over to me. That sort of character to me, it's like, okay. It's a little bit too real. It starts to get real when actors pass away and they're filling these roles and trying to move on from them. It's happened a lot the past like 10 years. Obviously it happened with Carrie Fisher and Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's been happening more. It seems like I just have no interest, anymore. So celebrate the man's life. And that's the only thing I can say. It's obviously tragic, but yeah. I have admiration for someone that was suffering that much and still doing all this good work, and no one had a clue about it. That spoke a lot to me. So, let's see what else is going on in the world. Speaking of stuff, we're talking about movies. Bill and Ted Face the Music came out. It seemed like Bill and Ted was like a weird franchise to bring back, and because it's not like. It did extremely well when it came out, but everyone likes, it's enjoyable little romp, right?
Yeah.
Bill and Ted. I actually never saw the sequel. I've seen parts of it.
The sequel's very good.
I saw the first one in the theaters twice, and that was rare for me as a kid to see a movie twice in theaters.
I love the first one. I've only seen the second one a couple of times. The first one was one that I actually did not like as much as I when I first saw it, and as I saw it more, I grew to appreciate it more. The second one I've only seen twice, but I enjoyed it both times. I remember everyone saying it was bad when it came out, but it's really not.
It's gained like this sort of like cult following, but people have reversed on that and think it's even better than the first one. I see some people say that.
Yeah, it's very good.
A different movie.
I have not seen this new one. I will at some point. I've everything I've heard about it since it's come out is. That it's been quite good. I haven't heard a bad review of it.
80% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Which is, that's pretty big.
As wholesomely goofy as its heroes, Bill and Ted Face the Music is a rare, long-belated sequel that largely recaptures the franchise's original charm. Because I've tried this with, Dumb and Dumber. The sequel came out, 20 years later, and no one cared, the true sequel. And so, obviously, it's tough to pull off. I guess I'll see it at some point. I just had no interest. Once I saw it hit, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know if as I'm getting older, if I want to just try to just automatically go back 30 years to try to recapture a feeling that easily from the movies anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ever really looking to recapture a feeling, but if it's a good movie on its own merits, I mean, I'd like to see it. So.
But yeah, I guess that's true. But the odds are, with track records, that this could have been a disaster potentially in the making.
Yeah.
There was a chance. And they didn't have George Carlin, obviously, again. Interesting to see how they address that, because obviously he was great in those. And then New Mutants. New Mutants scene is such a strange story of a movie, because I remember we talked about this trailer like 3 years ago on the podcast for this movie. So this was officially the last Fox X-Men produced movie to be made. Even though, I mean, they made this fucking thing before even the freaking X-Men Dark Phoenix came out. they made this thing around the same time. They filmed it in mid-2017, April 2018 release it was set for. So yeah, I think I saw that teaser late in 2017. And then they kept pushing this back and back. And then all of a sudden...
And then I remember seeing it, like, I remember seeing a preview for it in the theater.
Yeah.
Like, 2 years after I saw the first preview for it. Like, they were like, okay, it's going to come out. We got to work this preview back in. But, yeah, it's not... So, it finally came out, and it has not gotten particularly good reviews.
Well, now it's under Disney's banner, so they're like, right, what do we do with this thing? You know?
But I don't know that I'm ever going to bother watching this. It's just been through so many problems and so many delays.
Reshoots.
And then you start to read about the movie, about how Josh Boone wanted to make Storm an evil character that was like a warden of the prison that they were in.
And you're like, this guy shouldn't be touching an X-Men property at that point.
Yeah, and then whitewashing the character of Roberto Da Costa, who's played by Henry Zaga in the movie. He's a dark-skinned man in the comics, and they went with a light-skinned man in the film. And when asked about it, and asked about the racism in Brazil and stuff, he said, I don't care about racism in Brazil. I needed someone who looked rich.
Is the character rich?
That I don't actually know, but
why does that do it? I don't understand. Like, why would he even go there?
I don't know, because he's shitty.
It's only a lighter skinned person could be rich. Like, I don't understand. That.
Yes, that's what he's implying. Yeah, I mean, it's just fucking dumb. So there's it just seems like such a weird, a lot of bad ideas. I just don't think there's anything worth seeing it. I would have liked to have seen...
I never read a New Mutants book in my life.
New Mutants books are good. I would have liked to have seen Maisie Williams's Wolfsbane, but I just... one actor playing a character is not going to get me to see a movie that by all accounts sounds miserable.
Yeah, I don't know the characters enough to want to see this either way. This is one of the reasons why Fox had to obviously sell their entertainment division, because they didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Here's his exact quote. I didn't care so much about the racism I've heard about in Brazil, about light-skinned versus dark-skinned. To me, it was I wanted to represent Brazil in a positive way, and I wanted to find someone who seemed like he could look like a guy who's had the silver spoon in his mouth, who had a rich dad. Okay. Thereby,
Well, it just sounds like, even besides that, he didn't know what he was doing.
No.
If he was thinking about Storm being like a prison warden, basically, to keep these kids trapped. It's just tone deaf. Yeah. What's with Josh's? Josh Trank did the Fantastic Four, which I finally watched a chunk of over the weekend, Ian, because it was on. I saw it on, so I hit the add to library thing on YouTube TV. So which basically records it from that point going forward. So I watched like the last half of Fantastic Four. It's as bad as what people were saying about that movie. It's bad. It's really bad.
The reboot one?
Yes, the 2015 one.
Yeah.
It's bad.
I'm sure.
It's miserable. It's shot like with no lights. Most of the movie takes place in the fucking military tech lab installation. There's no action scenes at all, except for the last 5 minutes of the movie. It's bad. So if that's how it was for the first half of the movie, I can imagine how fucking terrible this movie was, where it's just like this serious buildup of these four characters. Somehow they're all young and going to the fucking Planet Zero, they call it, get their powers. Like, they're all like in their 20s. They would never be allowed to do that. Would they sneak off behind dad's back? It's horrible. And then the worst part of the movie, Because obviously, famously, Josh Trank trashed his own movie before it came out because he had a bigger version in mind. And then I read there was no director's cut of the movie ever. It was never cut together. But even in the trailer, they show, like, the thing, like, dropping from a fucking airplane to, like, do the government's bidding. Like, be, like, an agent and fight off, you know, people in third worlds or whatever. So in the movie, you don't see that. You see, like, them going to the thing and say, oh, we want you to work for us. We'll promise to get you a cure. And he goes, what do you want me to do? Then it cuts to 1 year later. So, you know, they cut out, like, the whole sequence of him actually fighting and seeing something cool, at least. It cuts away from that and just goes to people around, like, a boardroom zone. Oh, yeah, these four, we got these four people and we're keeping track of them and seeing how they're doing and just showing, like, Michael B. Jordan throwing fireballs in, like, in a warehouse. And you see, what's her name, who played Sue Storm with the ridiculous wig from the reshoot, you can tell, throwing out her force. They shot it. It's a mess. And then the last part of it, this is the only time I ever talk about this movie, so I bring it up. People were talking about Dr. Doom. So Doom comes back from the planet Zero, and they say, well, how do you look like this? Well, your hazmat suit got, you know, fused with your body. That's why you look like that. But he has these ridiculous powers where he basically can make your brain explode, Ian, just by, like, looking at you. So he does that in the movie. Like, this is, again, a superhero movie where he makes everyone's brains explode. That's his power. Guys with machine guns try shooting him. He's got a force field. You see heads blow up. Basically, with, like, blood. I don't know how this is PG-13. So he does that. That's Doom's power in the movie. So then he goes back to his planet in order to suck all the, you know, it's the vortex in the sky trope. Suck this planet to his because he has to destroy the Earth because he doesn't want the people on Earth to destroy his new planet. So the Fantastic Four, the only time they're an action group, they then go back to this planet Zero to face Doom. So Doom, you think, could just blow up their brains instantly, except for maybe the thing. He doesn't do that for whatever reason. He says he can do that to humans. And then it's literally like 5 minutes of action and the movie ends. Like,
sounds bad.
So I know people don't want Disney to, like, you don't want one monolith entertainment company to run everything. But when it comes to this shit, they would not make horrible decisions since they have a vested interest in these IPs not to fuck them up this badly. That's the difference for X-Men and for Fantastic Four. They would never have greenlit movies this bad. That's the point, right, when it comes to this. They wouldn't. Because when that gets tanked, it forces them to then not put out Fantastic Four comics and to make like one of the biggest properties that once existed and doesn't exist anymore. It devalues their properties. Fantastic Four used to be the marquee superhero team title for Marvel at one point in time, for a long time, and now it's, like, worthless, partially because of this bullshit that happens.
Yeah, I just looked up the Doctor Doom from that version. I had never seen it before.
It doesn't look horrible, like the look, but, like, how he acts is horrible. It's sure. It's worse than the two previous Fox films. It's much worse. So, I don't know what it is with Josh's. When you said Josh, it sort of set me off. Like, what is with these Josh's that don't know what they're doing with these properties? Get people that respect these fucking properties. How hard is that to do? How hard is that? Hey, do you respect the comics? Make it like the comics. No. Okay, you're not hired. Like, it's that easy.
Yeah.
It's that easy to do that. Sorry, I know it's just a coincidence. I saw that over the weekend. And we finally, just a fucking mess of a movie. You want to check it out at some point? I mean, it's worth it. The morbid curiosity is worth it.
No,
it is worth it.
No, almost. Over the weekend, morbid curiosity finally got the best of Vani and I, and we watched Jurassic Park 3. It was very bad.
That's what they brought back the original.
They brought
doctor,
back
right?
Sam Neill, yeah.
And they got a cameo of his wife.
Yep.
Right? But yeah. That's it for her. And then she's out. And Goldblum's not in that one, right?
Goldblum's not in that one. It's just a bad movie.
It's a bad movie?
Yeah, it was not good.
Was it better than Lost World? I remember not liking Lost World.
I did
World
not
at
like
all.
Lost World either. As much as I love the first Jurassic Park movie, I really dislike the sequels.
Did you see the two new ones?
I saw the first one and Jurassic World, and I liked it well enough. I did not see the second one.
They just seem like remakes, though. Like, what else can you do with these fucking dinosaurs at this point?
Yeah,
they opened the theme park that originally was dangerous to open, so they decide to open it, right? Yeah. Is that the new movies are about?
Yes, basically.
And then they fuck up again, so now you have dinosaurs roaming on the island again, like in the originals.
Yeah, I don't know if the second Jurassic World is also we're going to reopen the park again, but at least...
But the first one that's open, though.
Yeah, the first one's open. Lost World, they didn't open it. The third one, they did not open it. They were like... It was like...
They had to retrieve the lost people or something in the third one. That's what
they had. They had to retrieve people that had gotten like stranded lost. There on a photo shoot, like parasailing.
They went parasailing because that's a good idea. We want to parasail anywhere near the island where dinosaurs are. Even if there's a 1% chance we're going to land on the island with dinosaurs.
Yeah, it was not good.
It's not good. And I'm sure there was like a subplot in the third one about, I've seen parts of it where it's like, we're not just rescue them, we're going to try to get embryos back or samples so we can clone them or whatever. So,
no, there's
something like that.
There's a guy who goes on the, who gets Sam Neill to go on the trip, who then grabs raptor eggs from a nest halfway through.
So it's basically the plot of Aliens.
And then there's a problem like later. Yeah it's
basically
it's
Aliens.
It's all very, very predictable and bad. It was not good.
We're gonna try to rescue the people, but really we want to take the technology or the monetize it or weaponize it or whatever, like in Aliens, how that happened. You're willing to sacrifice people to get your alien embryos or whatever the fuck. God, what a fantastic Paul Reiser performance. It's the slimiest guy ever.
He is so slimy in that. It's really, really gross.
It's great. It's just the quintessential performance. I always forget about that. We talk about Aliens. We didn't mention Paul Reiser at all.
No, we didn't. God, he's so easy to hate in that movie.
Oh, God. He locks her up to get impregnated by the crab alien. God, it's fantastic. Locks up Newt.
Facehugger.
As well, the facehugger, yeah. Yeah, Crab's a different alien, right? In the third one or whatever, they started to do more of these aliens.
There's the dog alien.
The dog
alien
one
in the
and
third one.
The pig one in the director's cut. You ever see the director's cut of Alien 3? It says it's not a director's cut.
It's not a director's cut.
It's the closest thing to it yeah. But it even says on the DVD, I said to Frank, it says it's not a director's cut.
Yeah, he won't put his name on it.
But it's
closer. He won't fucking talk about it.
He won't even talk about it. Imagine working on a movie and it's such a horrible story you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's not to get too side. I don't hate Alien 3. I don't think it dashed on the rocks so much.
Of the second one. Yeah.
So much potential. Yeah. On its own, it's fine, but like, about what could have been.
We could have got a Michael Biehn and Sigourney Weaver adventure in the third one.
Yep.
Or even just Michael Biehn. If she didn't want to come back, then you have him. And then he got paid out, though. They paid him.
Oh, yeah, no, he got paid.
He got paid as if he starred in the movie.
Yeah, he got a shitload of money for that.
But, like, I don't understand why you would just go off that track. God, they got to make that Alien 5 the real one. I know they probably will never, but, God, that'd be so, I don't care how old they are. Bring him back. Bring back teenager Newt. 25-year-old Newt. Okay. Time to start the podcast, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
So, Activision has filed a lawsuit against a Call of Duty cheat seller here. This is the appetizer before the main course of this topic. So, obviously, cheats are big with online games, and I guess with some console stuff, too. But it sounds like with consoles, the more I learn, like, people sell, like, controllers that help you cheat. So, you actually buy hardware that helps with recoil.
It's been around for a long, long time. There have been controllers that, basically, they have chips in there, and they're auto-fire controllers. So, they can empty, certain guns that would have, like, a very slow fire and reload, they'll empty them like they were a machine gun. Lots of updates have been done to kind of negate the efficiency of...
So, say, couldn't the software know that, hey, these are firing too much or too quickly?
Yeah, and I can't pretend to know all the ins and outs of it, but even with updates that looked for stuff like that, people were making new chips and new things that would kind of skirt it, that would fire things at variable rates to kind of get around it looking for, a trigger at specific intervals. But people don't call me looking for them anymore. So my guess is that they're probably not.
They used to call you looking for hacked controllers?
Oh, yeah. People used to call me looking for rapid fire controllers all the time. It was a huge, huge market. There's a dude in Ocean Beach who used to make them, and good dude. But I don't know if he's still around. But, I mean, he made a living off of just selling hacked 360 controllers.
And that would just make you be able to fire like a handgun, like a machine gun, basically.
It was like I said, I can't pretend to know all about it. But yes, it was basically, it would let you use these guns that were extremely powerful that maybe only would give you like one shot every couple of seconds to, just unload the whole clip.
Well, Activision, obviously that'd be tougher to clamp down on, but now they filed a lawsuit against this cheat manufacturer. And it looks like it's for the newer Battle Royale one, Warzone. It's like it's happening the most.
Warzone's a mode within all of the new ones, so it's a mode within Modern Warfare. And what's causing the problem is that a lot of these are cross-play now. So whereas on console, you used to be at least somewhat...
safe from the cheaters.
Somewhat safe from cheaters.
Software
cheaters to a degree. And even that could eventually be hacked if you had modded systems and whatnot. But you were much safer from it than you are now, because now it's just mixing everyone together into the same bowl. So you have your PC players with your Xbox One players, with your PS4 players. So yeah, the potential is there that you're getting a lot of cheaters mixed in with the console playing pool.
So this was interesting, just because I didn't know how bad this was when I saw something on one site, this banned like 70,000 people for suspected cheating, like a lot of... I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Even if that's like 5% or 2%, like, that's just too many cheaters. Like, that's ruining almost every time you're going to come online, you might find a cheater.
Right.
You know, every other game. So, this company shut down their Discord. It's CX Cheats. They shut down their Discord, and then the cheaters were complaining about paying $60 and not being able to use it in the future and wanting their money back. And it's like, go fuck yourself. I mean, simpler can I say it than that? It's like, go. I never understand people that cheated at video games.
Eat a hot bone. I have no tolerance for
how
that.
How do you have fun? I mean, I just,
how is it fun to my cheat
brain
at
is
games?
Just, my brain is just wired differently.
Yeah.
What fun is it that you're trolling people by easily defeating them and ruining their, you know, you're a guy, maybe you get off from work, guy or gal, you want to just play a game for a couple hours, and then you're frustrated by someone you know is cheating. Like,
do you have that low of self-esteem that you cheat to make it so that you can win a game and then lord it over people?
But first of all, how do you get to that point where you cross that weird barrier where I'm going to cheat? Because we see it in sports, and we see it everywhere. I knew Kevin used to cheat at board games. That's how you know he was a scumbag.
We've talked about this before. People who cheat at board games.
I mean, you should be shot. You should be shot. The trust, you are putting your trust and integrity into someone else's hands when you play a board game.
Yeah.
The whole system breaks down if trust is not there for a board game. You have to build up the trust. So, so this was a horrible thing that happened. It's good that they're suing the fuck out of these people and going to go after them and shutting this down. But then I saw a streamer, Ian, coincidentally, a streamer get caught red-handed on Twitch. Just made the rounds.
Who likes Schadenfreude? Who likes to see a little bit of hubris punished?
Because
we got it right here. Mr. Gold is his name.
Mr. Gold on Twitch.
Mr. Golds is a Twitch streamer who, there's a clip, we're pulling this from sportskeeda.com, but there was a clip.
It was on Twitter too.
Okay, on Twitter as well. There's a clip of Mr. Golds, the Twitch streamer. This is just a minute long clip. And he's bragging to his chat.
After the game must have just ended.
Talking about how, what's the big deal? Have you guys never seen someone play the game this well before?
Yes, have you not seen this? I'm good.
Have you just... Oh, yeah. I'm just very good. Have you not... it's like you guys have never seen someone who's good play at this game before. While he's got the menu for the cheat, the cheat menu opened on his screen.
Yeah, he has his task manager open for some reason, which shows your program's running a computer. Behind that, you can see the menu, which I guess why they call it a cheat menu, because it's literally a menu with like aimbot and other stuff, and you have different settings. It's literally open while this moron is bragging about how good he is at Call of Duty.
Yeah. Bragging his ass off to his chat that he's so good, while the cheat menu is right there. And in the clip that I've seen, no one in chat calls him out for it. But as he's bragging, like really talking himself up, he looks at his computer, and then you kind of see him just get silent, and he's kind of moving his mouse away from the cheat menu, and you realize he has no idea what to do. Like, he's been caught with his pants
should I
down.
Not just close it and then if I close it, people realize I was looking at the chat and that, and I like to see the longer video when people realize, oh no, what's going on, because when he was doing this, it was over 1,000 people watching. I believe this is not a small Twitch streamer. This guy I read almost had 80,000 followers. That's a really big, you know, Twitch streamer to get 80,000 followers. So he did an apology video, Ian.
Well, first of all, let's just state that it was put on Twitter, and people were calling for him to get his channel reported to Twitch. He does have a Twitch ban currently. Who knows how long? Twitch bans, when I hear the word ban, I always assume that it's like permanent. Twitch bans always seem to be like a slap on the wrist. They're like a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, Dr. Disrespect got a couple weeks for filming in
a fucking bathroom, public bathroom. So I don't think he's going to be gone for long, which is unfortunate. These people just, they don't fucking learn anything this way.
Did Activision nuke his fucking account?
No idea.
I hope that I would think they would with all this going on and they hear about this.
They would probably have.
Yeah, we just came down on. I'm going to check on Twitter right now. So before we get into his apology, why is this not a victimless crime when people cheat at this, especially in this age? Obviously, it's not victimless because you're ruining other people's experience. They paid money for this, or at least if this is a free mode or whatever. They're putting time into something. You're fucking over the company that made it because you're ruining the end user experience for all these people. So you're screwing with the company that put their time and effort into this game to begin with and money to make this game. But then you're ruining the experience for everyone else who might not want to even indulge in, you know, and maybe putting some money into the game further for whatever, paying for skins or whatever. So we're talking on the monetary level alone. Yes, you are affecting the company directly, then you're screwing over the people playing it. But when it comes then to the Twitch ecosystem, if you're gaining a following because you are good at a game, you're performance enhancing for your own monetary benefit, like, and your own reputational benefit.
Yeah, you. Nope. Wow, brain. Fucking Christ, brain.
Did Dr. Doom just let it splatter right
yeah.
there?
Oh, but you're also potentially, you know, if you're gaining viewers off the idea that you're very good at this game, you're potentially, but you're cheating. You're potentially taking viewers away from someone who's actually quality at the game.
Yes, and taking their money for subscriptions and for donations and tips. That because, listen, I'm not going to try to lob more ad hominems at this guy than I have to, but just looking at his apology video, which we'll get to, I don't think this guy was making it on his personality alone as a Twitch streamer and his charisma. He was making it because he was good at the game.
Right.
Through the cheats, obviously. Which I guess is a thing. I personally would not follow someone on Twitch because they're awesome at a game, but I can picture other people that would. I can picture people be like, oh, this person is awesome. He's sniping people. He's getting headshots. He's going on killing sprees. You know, he's earning the nuke bomb or whatever in Call of Duty and dropping on people. I can understand that. And that's probably how some of these people make a living, is doing that. So he's a cheat. He's a thief. It's disgusting. And that's before we get to the apology video.
Yeah, the apology video is incredibly insincere. Full of all of the, this is not who I am, guys, sort of stuff. You know, and he starts talking about how he wants to earn people's trust back. And I think he was saying he wanted to start playing with a controller. English is not his first language, so I could have been mishearing some of it.
That's what he said. He wants to try to relearn it with a, because he realized that, yeah, if I go play this on a PC, no one's going to ever trust again that I'm playing this without a cheat.
Right. Yeah, that's what I assumed he was trying to say. Apparently he tried to deny that he was cheating in an Instagram post the day after.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Before he came clean. Yeah, this is a PC Gamer article. Yep. Mr. Golds appeared to deny that he was cheating in an Instagram post, saying that he was not hacking yesterday. The message is a bit hard to decipher because English is not his first language, but the intent is clear enough. He also indicates that at some point after this incident, he streamed with a background camera that showed no background programs running on his monitor, presumably to prove that he doesn't need to cheat to win.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Then the question remains then, even if you didn't, why would you have the cheats? Like, that's why...
Yeah, so why is it on your computer?
No, it's ridiculous. No, this is zero tolerance when it comes to me. When cheating, plagiarism, lying, you don't get a second chance for something like this because you don't deserve it. Because you already... The damage is already done. You can't go backwards. This is like with... you know, all the guys that got caught in baseball for performance-enhancing drugs, they got caught after they got their big contracts. So a lot of them. So they already got paid out. They hit their home runs. They got their $100 million contracts. Okay, suspend me for half a year. Who cares?
Right.
So it's like you can't undo it, all the damage that's been done, at least for that professionally, unless there's some clause for that. But no, this is gnarly to me how bad this is. And then he used my favorite line when it comes to apologies. This is not who I am.
That's what I said, yeah.
Oh, you did say that?
I said at the beginning, yeah. Full of all the classic... All the classic
the,
shit.
The Cincinnati Reds announcer who got fired for using the homophobic slur on the hot mic, he didn't realize that was the first thing he said.
This is not who I am.
No, it is. I mean, you can say I made a mistake and try to get away with that, but no, it is who you are when you say those things. If not, you wouldn't have said it or done them.
Right, exactly.
You don't say this is
100% who you are.
Then how do I define who you are by things? If I can't do it by things you say and do, then how am I defining you then? Do these sort of apologies work with people? I guarantee you it'll work with some of this guy's followers. He'll be like, oh yeah, it's fine. I just want to see cool headshots. I don't care if you're cheating or not. Does anyone have any fucking honor anymore when it comes to stuff?
People don't like to look at something that goes wrong and go and reassess and go, maybe that person wasn't who I thought they were, and maybe I shouldn't be following them. People love to double down on that sort of stuff.
Oh, really? We haven't seen that in our society in all the past 4 years.
No, never.
Or
never,
tripling down.
Never seen it.
So I don't know where I don't see why Twitch would have this person back at all. I hope it's a permaban. I really do. And this guy was trying to blame the world situation in his apology, but he's like, oh, you know, things are happening. It's like, things are happening to everyone. Doesn't mean you got to fucking lie and cheat.
Doesn't mean that you fucking cheat at a video game so you can brag about it to your viewers.
Yeah. Bragging and then to get that sweet subscriber and tip money there. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. So anyway, this is the modern gaming topic you always wanted. Yeah, from Mr. Golds. He's a scumbag streamer of the week.
Of the week. So, Numbskull, the people who make the quarter scale arcades.
They sent me a nice Galaga one a couple months ago.
Those things look really cool. They do... they've done Galaga, they've done Pac-Man. What else have they done? Have they done a Centipede? I think a different company did a Centipede. But they launched a Kickstarter for a new cabinet, and it's an interesting one. It's for Polybius. So Polybius, for those who don't know, is it's like the first video game urban legend, more or less. Or at least perhaps the most well-known. It was basically rumored to be a game that showed up in arcades and disappeared very quickly.
In the Northwest, I think that's what it was rumored?
I think so.
Let me look up the Wikipedia.
It was used by the CIA to brainwash people, basically, was what it said, what the rumor was. To pull from the Kickstarter that Numbskull's doing, speculation surrounded the game. Many believed it was a tool used by the U.S. government to test and recruit potential soldiers, where others claimed that it caused seizures or brain aneurysms. Some even thought the CIA was using it to brainwash people. In reality, recent evidence suggests that it was actually an intentional hoax and possibly one of the world's earliest successful viral marketing campaigns.
So they think these actually were put in some arcades?
I guess.
I've never heard of that before.
I've never heard that either.
Because Wikipedia says, Legend describes the game as part of a government-run crowdsourced psychology experiment based in Portland, Oregon, during 1981. Gameplay supposedly produced intense psychoactive and addictive effects in the player.
So,
You ever see that Emilio Estevez arcade short story film from like the early 80s around this time? It reminds me, I guarantee you it's sort of connected to this urban legend because there was something like that where he couldn't stop playing the game.
No, I had no idea.
I looked it up while you talked. Sorry. Okay. It reminds me of this.
So anyways, going back to Polybius. So what Numbskull is doing is they're making a 3/4 arcade scale cabinet for Polybius, which, you know, never really existed. There isn't one to model it off of. So they're doing it on their own. It's black. It has blue stripes on the side. And it's got a backlit marquee. The marquee is interesting. The font they're using is the one that I remember. Actually, there's a picture of it here that I remember seeing in the Simpsons episode that mentioned Polybius. It's also, I believe, the same typeface they used for Llamasoft made a Polybius game a few years ago.
Okay.
The people who made... the guy who made Tempest 2000, Tempest 3000. I think Space Llama was the name of one of his other games. So they're pulling from some stuff, from some lore that already exists, I guess, like what the marquee would look like or what the typeface would look like. But they've kept the actual cab itself fairly simple. I was interested kind of in this, what they were going to put in it. They're not putting a game in there at all. of any kind. It's going to be a USB power hub for all the other numbskull arcades. So it can power up to 10. It's got 10 USB ports on the back of it, and it can power up to 10 of the machines.
There's going to be some video on it, right?
There is video. There is a screen on it, and it just shows like trippy video and sound. So they, you know, they add a little something to it.
Yeah, I'm playing it. There's static. It goes into like a little Twilight Zone looking thing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
it's neat. I would have loved to have seen
that game license.
Some sort of game put in there, whether it was the LlamaSoft one or even just an attempt at one, having just like a another take on it. I think it would have been neat to see. I like all this mini stuff. I'm not sure if it was actually Numbskull who did it or not, but someone did a USB power hub that looked like a mini change machine a couple months ago. It was making its way around Twitter. It was really nice looking. I like all these miniature scale items, but this would personally be a tough sell for me without something playable.
This
on
is going to cost you
I think 100 pounds, so probably about 120 US.
133 according to Kickstarter, and then with shipping it'll be about 170 shipped. That's all.
But that's expensive for
these are big though. Keep in mind, these are core. These are big. Right. These aren't the little. These are big guys. Yeah. Bigger guys. I'm not sure what more I have to say about this. The urban legend is interesting. People are now surmising that this was a combination of people thinking there was a game called, I didn't know this, Cube Quest came out in '83 in very limited, I guess, fashion. And it was, it used 3D polygonal graphics with Laserdisc streamed animated backgrounds. So people were thinking maybe they were confusing that with this, because that was probably a trippy thing to see back then.
Sure, yeah.
And whenever people talk about Polybius, it's like weird shapes, I guess.
Yeah.
So people think it might be a combination of that.
Yeah, I've always heard it described as like an abstract shooter, basically. I think it was supposed to be.
The movie I'm bringing up is called Nightmares. And it was in the 80s, you had some anthology horror movies.
I love anthology horror movies.
I love Cat's Eye. I love that freaking movie.
Cat's Eye, yeah.
So in '83, they had a movie called Nightmares come out. I don't know if it was originally supposed to be it was originally a 2-hour TV pilot. Okay, it was called The Bishop of Battle was a one of the four stories. It had a very young Emilio Estevez. He's a video game wizard and arcade game hustler, and he discovers this new game called The Bishop of Battle, a manually difficult video game that features 13 levels. No one he knows has made it to the 13th, and many believes it is just a myth. He repeatedly tries and fails to make it to the 13th level until the owner forces him to leave at closing time. So he becomes obsessed with this game. It's not exactly like Polybius, but it seems like around 83 is when this stuff sort of hit.
Sure.
In terms of like these urban legend things. And so it could be connected to this, or this was based upon that, or what have you. It's all interesting.
Well, yeah, I guess they wouldn't be using the LlamaSoft Polybius, because I think you can play it without VR, but it's a VR title and looks fairly intense, so you're probably not going to be able
to be tough to put in that
cabinet. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta look up this Cube Quest real quick then, to see if there's gameplay. I don't think I've ever heard of this before. Cube Quest 84 Laserdisc. Let's see here. Oh, it's on. Okay, here it is. Oh, it's
that's neat looking.
It's trippy.
Yeah,
there's a lot of trippy graphics. Whoa. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see people thinking it was this.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, that would make sense to me.
There's a lot of abstract sort of things going on. Here's a direct copy. All right. Well, check out Cube Quest, because I never really heard of that. And check out this Kickstarter. I don't know if the quarter size arcades are interesting because they're in that weird in between. It's not a full arcade. It's not a small thing. You got to have a place set aside for it, just for like, you know, one shelf for it. So I guess if you have a collection of them, though, this would be a cool thing to add to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing it as. It's for the people who are already collecting them.
Sure. All right, Ian. We got to talk about GameStop.
We do.
Coming into the news. No, it's not. It's not someone being added to their board of directors and thinking they're going to save the company, which is funny when that happened. So GameStop soars, at least the stock did, after co-founder of Chewy acquires a stake. So GameStop Corp. rose as much as 27% after an investment firm managed by the co-founder of Chewy.com acquired a stake in the travel video game retailer. Chewy.com, Ian, does online pet food and other product sales. That's what they're known for. So they bought 9% of the stock share. So
that's,
they got
5.8 million.
So that means they're the third biggest investor in GameStop behind BlackRock and Fidelity, according to good old Bloomberg. GameStop shares climbed as high as $6.82 on Monday, the biggest intraday gain since April 14th. They had been down 11% this year through the end of last week. I'm shocked it wasn't down more, being that I can't picture GameStop selling anything right now versus the previous years, not just due to the pandemic, but you know, console sales haven't been hitting besides for Switch, but I can't picture GameStop selling many Switches because no one has them.
Well, that's where I would almost say that I kind of understand this. So I still think this is people throwing money at something that is, you're flushing money down the toilet here. I don't think there's any true way to save GameStop. That said, I'm not surprised if they've been having a better couple of months. Without getting into direct, Luna had like its best month ever in its 15 years last month.
Ever.
Like, we were insanely busy. I'm sure it's not just us. You know, I mean, I talk about this with people all day long at work, but there's nothing to fucking do right now. Nothing.
That is true.
There's nothing to do.
Can't go to sports.
Everyone is buying video games, and as I've said, you know, on here prior, it honestly, at this point, it doesn't really matter what video games they are. People just want to play something. People will walk into Luna and be like, do you have a PS4? No. Do you have a 360? No. Well, do you have a Genesis? Yes. Okay, well, then I'll take the Genesis. And I can see people walking into GameStop and being like, do you have a Switch? No. Do you have a PS4? No. Do you have an Xbox One? Yes, we have those. Okay, well, then I'll take some of those and these games. Obviously, I don't know how much better the business is doing. I mean, just because the stock is up doesn't mean the business is up. But
and they're modern, more so.
Yeah, and they're more modern. But I mean, it would not surprise me if GameStop came out and had a good quarter. That would not surprise me this year.
The second quarter was lost since it was shut down.
Yes,
for most of the second quarter.
I wouldn't be surprised if the third quarter looked decent for them.
You're saying,
or at least
July,
better.
August, September might be better.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be worse than the first couple of quarters.
No.
But they're still dealing with digital sales eating into them. And I guess if people didn't have a PS4 or Xbox One yet, they want to get one, they might go to GameStop. But I would just get one online and do my game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't...
What I've learned from doing video game retail is that as many people that are going towards digital and doing things online, there are just as many people who can't wrap their brains around it and will still just buy everything physical. I mean,
you got to buy your console physical, but you can order it online, though.
Sure, that's what I'm saying. People won't. They'll go to stores to get it. They don't want to wait, even if it means running to 5 different stores and wasting time. I got like no calls last year for Madden 21 or Madden 20, but this year I got lots of calls for Madden 21, which, by the way, is supposed to be miserable.
Oh, we didn't bring that up before.
With COVID going on, and there are, like I said, lots of people who just want to be able to go out and buy something. There are still people who buy physical media and go to stores. There are people who have not made that leap to digital.
Yeah, this is...
And I'm not, in no way am I trying to say that GameStop is going to come back.
There is a reason
why I think they're having a small blip of relevance.
Well, if you can call stock price relevant, I mean, but the stock lost money. The shares lose money. I mean, you don't get money from these stocks. You don't. There's not enough money to go around with the amount of stocks. So, yeah, I don't know what this guy from Chewy is thinking. Maybe this... obviously, if you buy all these shares at once, the price is going to go up. That's just how it works. Just automatically. But then other people say, they're getting in on this. Something might be going on behind the scenes. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff with stocks. The stock market's super inflated right now versus the economy. I mean, that's not... I'm not an economic expert, but that's what people are saying. The economy is not good right now. People are still out of work. So the fact that the stock market's doing well, it usually is tied to the economy at least somewhat. So I think we're going to see probably another mini hit at some point. That's me saying that, my non-expert Pat when it comes to this, but because people are saying like these stocks are just overvalued, a lot of them, the value. But I don't know. I don't know how this affects the short market, which is basically betting against a stock. Those people might be thinking, what's going on here? I don't think this means anything in the long term for GameStop at all. It doesn't.
No.
The only thing I could think about was, well, if they went into bankruptcy, the more stocks you have, obviously you have more control. Maybe make a bid on the company or something like that. But I don't know how that works and how much stock you would need. They're not even the biggest stakeholder anyway. So I don't know how that would play in. Maybe it does. Maybe that's what they're looking at. But why would you want to buy GameStop at all?
Yeah, I don't know.
Even for pennies on the dollar, what do you do with it? It's if it went away, and you had the trademark and you had assets still, you know, that you can liquidate, it still wouldn't be worth your time and money, I think. It still wouldn't. Would you bring it back as an online brand like they try to do with Circuit City once they close all the stores? Like who cares?
Yeah.
I haven't looked to see what Toys R Us is doing this year. I haven't looked into that. So, all right. Well, you go to the clip completely unnecessary stock cast for more updates in the future on this GameStop. This segment of the CU podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. They're the leaders in men's below the belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience.
So the people at Manscaped have perfected the Lawnmower 3.0. It's the best trimmer.
Look at this thing. Look at this as offers. You got the guard. You got the LED light to guide you on your path down there.
A ceramic blade to keep you from getting snagged.
Yeah.
You definitely don't want to snag or clip
anything down there. It's the advanced skin-safe technology. Water resistant. They offer lots of stuff, Manscaped.
Body wash. Deodorant.
The reviver, the ball toner, it gives you a little pep in your step, a little spritz, you know, it gives that pH balance.
Little afternoon revival.
If you're worried about stanky balls, though, they got the ball deodorant. I'm not going to judge if you do. I mean, I'm not going to go down there and give it a whiff. But hey, that's why it's all private. There's a special offer right now, Ian, for everyone out there. Get 20% off of free shipping using code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. Again, 20% off free shipping. With code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's a pretty good deal, right?
Yeah, get out there and clean up your act.
Your balls are going to thank you. All right, Ian, we have a retro gaming topic. Thank God, because this week has been sort of paltry on this stuff. This happened. Josh, who runs SideQuest Games, we've dealt with in the past. He's always at Portland. Nice fellow.
Nice guy.
He's big into the water-graded games. He was quoted in the article. I think the Kotaku went back in the fall or early in this year about it, one of those articles. And he helped me get the matching Mario behind me for the Luigi there. He just completed a trade in the past couple days for a Nintendo. He traded a sealed Pokemon Red, 9.8 sealed. He told me it was like probably the highest known grade of that.
Highest known grade.
For the Pokemon Red. Traded that straight up for a Nintendo World Championship gray cart that was WADA graded 5.0 that he got. He posted it on Facebook. It was also on Twitter. And this is we can go in a lot of directions here. I'm shocked I saw a trade like this happen just because you really see the new speculators, collectors, versus the traditional ones sort of not butting heads but meeting right here, right?
Sure.
Josh has been a guy who's been around. He obviously owns a store and runs it, successful store, but now he's obviously getting into the water graded stuff, but those are people that are now coming from outside video games and getting into this. I cannot wrap my head around wanting, even if it's sealed, a Pokemon Red game and giving up a Nintendo World Championships cart for that. We're talking about a game that has historical and cultural significance of video games that they only made a few hundred of at most, like 350, and that less than 100 are known to exist. And that everyone is going to be after this game. It was always a game people were always after for video game collecting. That's not going away. And to trade that straight up is just, I don't know the mentality behind that, Ian. I don't know. It's just weird. An NWC in this market will go for, if he put this on Heritage, I can't picture going for less than 75,000-80,000. I just can't at this point in time. Maybe 100.
Yeah, I see that as well. It's but I think that that's where people need to be careful too. You cannot assign a value to a monetary value easily to something like the Pokemon Red.
Based upon the trade, you mean?
Based upon the trade. And I mean, I'm sure he knows that as well. He works in a business. Once you get into trade, monetary value is, you can't.
It doesn't mean the Pokemon Red's worth the same.
Right. It means that you found someone who really wanted that sealed Pokemon Red. They maybe have plans for it in the future. Maybe they think it's going to go up. But I don't think if you had put both of these on the market and had them both sell in the same day, you would find them selling for the same price.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely not.
No.
So I think that's one thing that people need to be careful of here, is that this does not make a sealed Pokemon Red worth the same monetary amount that the last known... NWC gold sold for, or gray sold for. It means that it's worth in trade an NWC gray to someone who really wants that Pokemon Red.
Yeah, we saw that with the Tom Brady card that got traded.
Right, exactly.
For one. We're like, doesn't mean the Brady's worth $100,000. I mean, that's insane. Or doesn't mean the NWC is worth that. Like, you can't put it to that. There's a lot of weird stuff that can be going on here. But this is a real trade that happened, for sure. And then he passed on, it's funny because he said, I had a chance to get this a few times in the past, like five times in the past, and I finally got one. Here. So I was like, I said, you made out. You won this trade.
Yeah, no, I mean, you
won this.
There's absolutely no denying the fact that he got the better end of this bargain. And I don't, it's not that I don't think a sealed Pokemon Red or a Pokemon Red in good condition couldn't be worth something. It is also a game with historical significance. Pokemon is wildly popular, but I just, we don't know how many are out there. It's not nearly as old. That's the other thing that I didn't say when I was talking to you yesterday, is we've seen examples in the past of, you know, with like Tim Atwood, of people being like, surprise, I've got shipping cases of stadium events. You all thought that
this was...
And
that's late 80s.
And that's late 80s. I mean, this was a game that was released in the U.S. in 98, I think it was. I think 98 was when Pokemon Red came here.
So we're talking a little over 20 years.
Yeah, anyway, I think it was technically released in 96 in Japan.
So he said, Josh told me he had fielded offers in the 20 to 35 range before for it. So I'm like, okay, 20 to 35, we'll just say around 25,000 right there. Maybe he could have got the cash for that. Some of these deals drop, who knows. So you could have, though, kept your, if you could have gave him the cash, though, and still made out buying a separate one, like, or keeping yours without trading. Like, I scratch my head when it comes to
trades. Obviously, the benefit is no cash needs to leave hands. But like I said, it does start to muddy what things are worth, because it's not going to be that same value to everyone else.
But okay, so if you look on Pokemon Red Sealed on eBay right now, sealed one for $3,000, which, I mean, obviously it's probably not a 9.8, but it doesn't look horrible to me. Here's one that looks horrible. A beat up for 2,500. Here's another one for $3,000. Here's a sealed one with a player's guide. Is it the player's guide sealed in? Did it come with the player's guide, some of these? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a cool one. It came with...
No.
It's one case with the sealed one and the... Yeah. It looks like its own SKU. Player's guide...
With the
it's
bubble.
Like a big, it's a big clamshell.
Yeah, okay.
So that's being bid on right now. It's at $6,300 with 2 days left. That might go for a lot given this...
Sure.
News or whatever, but that was still going to be bid on no matter what. There's one for, here's a 90 plus, oh no, it's Fire Red, sorry. Here's one, an 85 plus VGA gold. I don't know what that is. Is that a 9.0? I forget what Sean from Reserves Investment says about what they are. It's at least an 8.5 though. It's around a 9 for that. So that's on here, 12.5K or best offer. And there's a few others. So here's the point. This is a 9.8 that it survived as a 9.8 somehow. Could have been pulled from a shipping case. But this is a game readily available, even sealed. They made millions of these.
Yes.
So you're trading a game. I don't care the seal. This is the thing about the overvaluing the sealed stuff. You're trading a game where they made millions of them. And you can find a sealed one anytime you want for a game, again, that there's less than 100 known to exist. It just blows my mind. So this dealer or speculator must think that, yeah, this is going to be a game worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in the future. To me. I mean, I don't know how else you can justify that.
Yeah, trade. That's the only thing I can think, and I don't see where that idea would come from, especially because, without mentioning names, we've already seen some people be like, we don't know where the sealed market is going.
Yes, even people that might have been a little...
bullish on it
initially. A little bullish. might be like, you know what? Now we're like, we're almost 2 years into this now, right? We're almost not only 2 years in. Maybe we don't know where some of this stuff goes. We see what's happened with the Atari stuff already hitting the dirt within a few months and people losing thousands of dollars on bad investments. There's no reason this won't happen with NES games. There's no reason at all. Yeah. Well, even though NES games are hard to find sealed by and large than Atari games, obviously. The only one on Heritage Auctions that went for a Pokemon Red, there was only one example that I saw. View past sold examples. Oh no, there was a bunch. I gotta sign in to see. Give me a second here. Gotta sign in to Facebook. Don't steal my identity. Heritage Auctions. Okay. So all right, so one went an 8.0 A plus went for $4,400 in July. There with the buyer's premium. Is that the only sealed one I see? That's the only sealed one. So there's only been one sealed red one. That's one for $4,400. So this is a trading premium, if you want to call it, tens of thousands of dollars more to get that highest grade one. So that's what you're banking. You're banking that, okay, even if the seal stuff doesn't...
Yeah, you're banking that the seal is what's going to matter at the end of the
yes.
day.
And what,
not the game so
what
much.
I've always argued to these people's faces, no lie, argued nicely, but argued multiple times, is that if you're banking on just the seal alone... This is why this is different than other hobbies, and you cannot compare it to comic books. Because all those Golden and Silver Age comic books don't have seals.
Right.
You're just grading the actual item.
And like we've said, for the majority of people, a non-sealed, nice condition one, if you want it in
fine.
A case, if you want it graded, if you want it, that's fine.
It's
You're
fine.
Really banking that there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to continue to care about the seals and are going to continue to trade them back. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, what I see happening is people passing the same $100,000 around. Like,
yes.
And in a circle.
And it happens with the comics, too.
Yeah.
They have some of the comics, so the dealers are starting to buy things in order to pump up. You got to find the next person on the pyramid to pass it on to. So it comes back to the age-old question. Will there be enough people to see the same item, the same Legend of Zelda sitting next to a second one, and willing to put a 10,000% premium, by and large, on the cellophane? That's what the premium is on. It's the cellophane. That's it.
Right.
It's not even just the condition. It's the cellophane on top of that. And this is what we're seeing here. We're seeing, I don't know if this means the bubble's going to pop soon or next year. I think people are going to wisen up to this more sooner than later, though. I really think. I don't think it's going to last a decade. I don't think this is going to last 5 years.
No.
I could be wrong. But I don't know. There's just too much money at play here and not enough, I think, extra new money to get into it.
Yes, precisely.
Does that make sense? There's not enough new money to dive in behind it.
Yes, I don't think it's going to do a good job of bringing more people in that are going to be interested in the sealed stuff.
You don't have like a lot of the Silver Age stuff went up the past 10 years because of obviously the movies, like the Marvel movies, the DC movies. You don't have that with these esoteric titles. You don't have like the Star Voyager movie to come out to justify the $7,000 Star Voyager. Like you don't have that. These are lost entertainment titles. These are titles that
eventually we're going to see the same thing happen that happened with regular Nintendo carts. Eventually people are going to stop caring about the esoteric stuff and the weird stuff, and they're going to only care about the popular stuff. And I think stuff like a sealed Super Mario Brothers will probably be able to maintain and hold its value, but I don't think it's ever going to like you said, the Star Voyagers and the sealed other stuff, at some point people are going to stop caring.
Or realizing that, hey, I'm investing in this right now, thinking that there'll be a buyer to come along, but what buyer is going to come along to want this?
Right.
So for Pokemon Red, yeah, there's always going to be someone that wants Pokemon Red, probably, right?
There's always going to be someone who wants a Pokemon. There's always going to be someone who wants the Super Mario Brothers. But that's kind of what's always interested me, and I don't think I've ever actually articulated this, but has been weird about the sudden boom in sealed NES game collecting, and also with some of the Atari stuff, is this is happening well after its initial popular collecting period is over. It's like they're trying to restoke the fire on something that has already died and passed, because in general NES collecting is on a huge downturn, but they're trying to get the sealed stuff going back up. The Atari stuff we've seen already with like the Spider-Mans, initially you get some high price ones, but even as of last week, a Spider-Man sold for like $800.
Yeah, it was not. It was a 9.6 sealed one. I think it went for like 900, and last month a 9.6 went for like 3,000 to 4,000.
And then like earlier in the year, one went for like
the 9.8 went for like 9,000, and now it's so we did a follow up topic how it already had fallen. Yeah.
More than 50%. And now we're seeing it fall even more. This is not this is not sustainable.
And it's absolutely not sustainable to happen this quickly. And yes, we will be proven right on this. I just don't. Yeah. Yeah, it's nutty, and what's funny is that the we obviously talk about the store, the pandemic has helped the cart prices to edge back up on some of those NES titles, but it's still gonna take a hit afterwards though.
Yes,
but that's separate than the sealed people anyway.
Sure,
it's totally separate.
So I don't know, to close it off, I think Josh obviously got the better end of that bargain, and I mean kudos to him. I don't know what the person who took that Pokemon route is thinking is going to happen with it in the future.
Sure. So again, check out SideQuest Games. We're up in the Northwest. They got a store out there.
I've always enjoyed my interactions with them at Portland.
There's always guys a pretty nice setup at Portland.
Yeah, he does.
All right. Ian, we have a Patreon poll topic now. I'm going to regret. How do you access the Patreon?
Well, Patrick, you go to patreon.com/CU podcast and money is involved.
Money. What do you think? It's like a bank transfer with an ATM card.
Kind of.
You put your ATM card in.
You deposit the money and the machine spits out CU podcast related
items. It's like a vending machine.
But yeah, it's like a kind of. Sure.
You get stuck, you bang on it, Ian gets a top, writing comes out at the bottom.
Yeah, you hit it hard enough and writing appears. I do writings more or less weekly. I do a monthly hangout. You get the full video podcast early, and we do these little Q&A polls that you vote on, and we answer. Patrick, what do we got this week?
Well, Ian, in third place on the Patreon poll, this is one of the tightest three-way races ever. This was like a WWE WrestleMania 20 match, you know, going back and forth, throwing people out of the ring left and right. Tips for a new game store employee, third place at 29%. In second place, are Nintendo fans being entitled for wanting a Nintendo Direct, or should Nintendo have better communication with their fans? 33%. That was kind of clickbaity. And in number one, it happened after like 10 weeks on the charts, moving up. This was the most votes ever overall in terms of a poll topic.
I think they more voted for this just to get it off the list than anything.
I don't know, Ian. There was a strong backing. What video game, Ian, should be turned into a Broadway musical?
So this is the week where I go, you're going to have to carry this because I've put very little thought into this.
Oh,
and
really?
And I know you've put a lot of thought into this. So we're going to let Pat go ahead and hit us with what he thinks would make a great Broadway musical video game.
Well, you have different categories of, you know, I'm a big musical guy, Ian. Big. You have different categories of musicals. You got the ones that are more like parodies. You got comedy. You have more operatic ones like Phantom of the Opera or Cats, which is just weird. So I was thinking...
It's just strange.
Well, it's always strange. Now and Forever at the Winter Garden Theater. Commercials on the East Coast. We sell that all the time. Wasn't Now and Forever, by the way. So I was thinking of like what, you know, different categories of games, what would be like the more operatic traditional one? And I thought Castlevania could fit it.
Yes.
Perfectly. You got the outfits already. You got the Belmont family seeking, trying to clear their name and vendettas.
I was thinking this one as well. There's lots of opportunity for good song numbers about your historical past and about how be operatic, maybe even.
Yeah, each boss could sing something. You get to each boss and it's a nice cut in the musical, like Medusa. Like you'd be like, before you do a little battle, and
Frankenstein and Igor could do a little number.
A little two numbers.
Soft shoe. Jumps
around a little soft shoe. Obviously, you have the Medusa heads playing in there. I think that could be a fun little thing. And I'm surprised now that I think about it that there hasn't been video game musicals that have been tried, even like small. Maybe there has been. But
I mean, you've got your XYZ on ice, but, you know, that's not really music. There's Mortal Kombat on ice.
I never heard of that.
Was it on ice, or was it just a stage show?
It was a stage show, at least.
Yeah, it was definitely a stage show.
Do they have a lot of songs on the ice? I never saw it on ice
know.
In my life.
I
on
assume,
ice? Did they really do that?
Was it Mortal Kombat on ice? They definitely did a stage show.
I don't think it was on ice, Ian. That would be nuts for little seven-year-olds to watch, you know, decapitations and spines being ripped out.
I'll have to check back with Ray and Ali, the guy who wrote the NBA Jam book. He's posted about it on... on his
Twitter
it was
a stage
before.
Show. They did a live tour.
They did a live tour.
Live
tours were king.
Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, they did with the original cast. They went all around.
Yep.
On the live tours. This is pre-internet. You know,
now I want to see Mortal Kombat on ice.
Well, you can. I think that the actress I got for that ended up being the actress for Sonya in the third one. That's how I remember that. Anyway, back to the musicals, Ian.
Yes.
So you have your operatic stuff. Would there be a good comedy Broadway musical based on video games? Anything humorous that can make it? Could Parappa be a musical? I mean, that there's music built in.
Yeah, Parappa could be a musical. I also keep thinking, I don't know why.
Puppets or Parappa, or just you dress up and
you'd have to dress up. Shitty costumes. I was also thinking, and I don't know why, but this has entered my head more than once, and I think maybe it's because the game is. What's the fucking word I'm trying to use? The game is portrayed as like a TV show. Rockin' Cats. Maybe a little.
You had to fit Rockin' Cats. Been a year.
Maybe a little Rockin' Cats musical.
Okay. How? Each stage is themed, right? And Rockin' Cats, different channel.
Yeah, each stage would be themed. It would be a different set.
Would the stage be set as the TV though? Since you're watching it on TV,
yes, I believe so.
If someone comes out and turns the channel, a giant clicker?
Change the channel, curtains draw. Props change, curtains open.
Give me an example for Diddy.
Song number. I don't know. I'm not singing right now, Patrick.
The extension of the arm is like one of the songs itself?
Perhaps. But yeah.
Now, this is a question I have to ask you. For your video game musical, do you have to stick with the music that was in that game? Or could you just use that as a basis and go off on your own?
Use it as a basis. So many musicals just fucking make up songs out of whole cloth.
Well, yeah, but they didn't have songs that they could use.
Sure. I think you would want to obviously use some... You would want some hints of the music from the video game source material in there. But I think you could just go off and do your own things, too.
Would Wally Bear be a good musical, Ian?
For
the kids?
For, like, an assembly?
Yeah, an assembly.
At like... second and third graders, yes.
At 1 p.m. today, we have the Wally Bear. It's a little tour group that goes around, a little shitty touring group.
Yes. Everyone must gather in the assembly for Wally Bear the musical.
That was my gym. It was my gym when they had the stage.
When I was
up.
In Catholic school, it was a gym as well with a stage at the far end.
My gym at Catholic school, which was built like... it was built when I was fairly young, still was brand new. It had the weird tight-woven carpet. It wasn't wood floors. You ever hear this before? It was like that tight carpet that was as hard as a floor.
Yes.
Is that what you had too?
Yeah.
So if like you tripped and fell, you got, I mean, the worst rug burn ever that ever existed.
Oh, yeah. Falling on the stage. That's weird that you bring it up because I'm only remembering it now. But falling on stage was something no one wanted to do. It fucking hurt.
That it was hard enough to bounce a basketball, that rug. Like, it wasn't even a, like, I don't know what was that material?
I don't know.
Maybe you know what I mean? Like, you couldn't, like, separate out the fibers of it. It was that tightly woven. Okay, is there a game that you think would that didn't perform well as a... Oh, I forgot about one to do as operatic. God of War would be a great musical, wouldn't it?
God of War would probably work out very well, yeah.
As an actual opera. Mm-hmm. Not even as a musical, because it's all, like, gods and themes and, you know...
Dark Souls could possibly do it, too, because it's very, very dark and moody. There's a lot of, like, lore to it.
Okay.
I think you could do
like medieval stuff, or
yeah, a dark like operatic theme to it. But I know you have one that you're thinking of, Pat.
Yes, Ian, I do have one I've thought of, because I thought of what is one of the earliest NES games that really had a real story to it, and also combined with great moodiness and great songs,
wonderful soundtrack.
And we're talking Ninja Gaiden.
We are.
We had cutscenes. One of the first games that had a cutscene on a console, not the first, that told you the story and laid out the stakes for you, but then also had just great music behind it. So it's like it was a musical in and of itself.
Right.
I mean, it had acts to it.
Yes.
It had acts. I mean, it's staged as a musical, basically, Ninja Gaiden. So, Ian. No, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. I had a feeling that this was going to come up as a topic, based upon the early, you know, they do the early
numbers.
The early numbers came in with polling, you know, they get the exit polls.
Yeah.
So, I decided we cannot do this topic without me trying to sing a little ditty.
All right.
That I did. So this would be my Ninja Gaiden the musical. But keep in mind, I did not practice this more than once, and I wrote this before we did the podcast today. But hey, you voted for this on Patreon. People on YouTube, if you want to prevent this from happening, join the Patreon and vote against topics like this.
Yeah.
That's how I'm doing the hard sell here. So let me bring it up right now. Do I have it open here to sing to you? This is the intro to Ninja Gaiden. I will name this song My Father's Gone. Okay. God, I hope I don't screw this up. Gone, my father's gone into the abyss. His life is gone and done. Now he is dead. Fought with the ninja, stabbed in the head. My father is so very, very dead. My father's gone, raised as his son. My father's dead and gone, oh, dead. He taught me skills like how to kill with stars and sword. Avenge him, I will. Time for me to be real brave. Get on a ship to the USA. My revenge will soon be one day. Hey, that's not bad.
You did it.
I kind of flubbed the line. You see where I'm going with that, though?
Took far more balls than, yeah, that was good. It was good. Glad you got that out of your system.
Was that better than you expected? Come on.
It was good.
I kind of kept with it. It's kind of hard to cadence that up.
You did. You kept up with the tune. And, I mean, you know, for something you wrote this morning, it was beautiful. It's really bringing a tear to my eye.
Well, Ian, that's more exciting you've ever gotten for anything I've ever done in my life. So there you go.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I retweeted your
Flea Market Madness?
Yeah.
You're so excited you couldn't remember what you retweeted.
Yeah. I'm vibing off that tune. So yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much ends that conversation, and we'll never have to revisit it again. So I'd like to thank everyone who voted for that topic and finally got it off of the list.
Hey, Brentel Floss, I know you're putting up season 12 of your new music videos. I'm coming for you, Brent. I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. All right. We done with this podcast?
Done with this podcast.
You don't want to do a Q&A?
I don't.
We got one topic. 2, 3, 4, 5. I guess we're done. This is kind of a weaker one in terms of the topics this week.
I'm gonna go home and sleep. I slept like absolute dog trash last night.
like dog trash. Okay,
just couldn't sleep.
I was gonna say, any announcements, anything going on? Yoko Kids is out.
Yoko Kids, yeah, the pre-order.
Yeah, thanks Ian for getting that and my chili.
Yeah.
Was there a reason? I guess he wanted to save on shipping. He didn't want to ship it directly to me.
I have no idea. But anyways, he shipped it to me. I have no idea why that happened. The Yokoi Kids sold over 150 issues in that last pre-order. So that did really well.
Do you think, Ian, based upon the disappointment of not bringing me my items, that you deserve to try my great chili out?
I mean, that's really up to you.
All right. We're gonna have to debate that afterwards. All right. Check out UltimateNintendo.com for some nice wares there. Not for resales, back in stock as well if you haven't checked it out. And then check out the Flea Market Madness when you get a chance. Thank you so much there. I'll try to do, hopefully, knock on wood, like one a month. We'll see. If I do one a month, they'll be done by the end of early 2022. The ones I've... Because I don't know... First of all, I don't want to record during a pandemic. I think that'd be weird.
Sure.
Everyone has, you know, things over their face. It just is weird and depressing. And I mean, I still found stuff at the last flea market, like little things, but I don't want to record unless things got back to normal again. But they're 5 years old and 3 years old and 4 years old. I gotta edit these things.
Yep.
Got them out there. All right. That's Ian. I'm Pat.
Toodles.